Ladies and gentlemen, gays and theys, new year, new start, new you. January always brings a plethora of promises we make to ourselves, but sometimes the new year's resolutions can feel like sticking plasters on an open wound. So I wanted to find out how we can move forward in a more meaningful way rather than just promising to give up the stiggies. Fortunately, this week's guest is helping people to build healthy relationships with ourselves and other people from the inside out. She's a psychotherapist, relationship expert, and author of How to Unfuck Your Life and Relationships. It's Anita Astley. Hello, Anita.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on, especially the first of the year. That, you know, new year, new resolutions and new thoughts and ideas on how to unfuck ourselves completely from the inside out.
Yes. Is this a good time to do it? Is like New Year a good time for you?
It's the perfect time. You know, well, there's no, every day is a good day to unfuck our lives from the inside out. But New Year's is, a great time. I do love the New Year's. Some people, poo-poo all that kind of stuff. I'm like, no, it is absolutely the perfect time to reflect on the past year to see how things got really fucked up and how you want to unfuck yourself from the inside out. People ask me about this book. You know, what is this book about? They like the title. It's attractive. And they're like, are you trying to just get attention here? I'm like, no. First of all, unfuck and fuck, one of my favorite words. I use them in context. Using in context is important. But the book is really about my life and how, you know, I had a pretty fucked up life. And in the last 25 years, I've helped other people unfuck their life. And and it came from originally the feelings and the thoughts and ideas of from my patients who, you know, look at me on a day-to-day basis. And they say, you know, how are you going to empathize with my issues? You look like you got your shit together. And I would say, listen, honey, if you knew me 30 years ago, I was pretty fucked up. And it took a lot for me to unfuck myself through therapy, through different things that I did in my life. And that's why I wrote the book. People are making themselves vulnerable to me in my office on a daily basis. And this book, I put it all out there to say, listen, my life was pretty fucked up. I got some help. I unfucked it. Here are some of the stories of my life that were pretty fucked up. And these stories are pretty intimate. So it's my story. And then I share 7 concrete prescriptions that I think everyone needs to incorporate in their life to get back to the basics of love and life. We've kind of lost our way in this technologically advanced world, which I love. I love technology, but I really think we need to get back to some basics, which are kind of lost.
Let's go back. What is it? What kind of things have you been through to make you go, right, I need to stop and I need to unfuck this?
Well, I think for myself and for most people, having, listened to people's narratives, it does start with our family of origin. And once you leave, you move out or whatever your circumstances are, once you escape your parents, we carry all that stuff into our relationships with other people, and not necessarily romantic relationships, but just relationships in general. And then, once I left home, and the story of me leaving home is quite a traumatic story, because I grew up in an Indian household. And I don't know if you guys know much about the Indian culture. You don't leave home until you're married, especially if you're a girl. And generally, your marriage is arranged. It's a little bit different now, more progressive, but I think the ideas are still the same in terms of you don't date. And I grew up with this message, you don't date, you just marry. And growing up in Montreal, Canada, I had a problem with that because I wanted to be part of mainstream culture. I just wanted to be like everyone else. And then my dad said, no, be the nice little Indian girl. You're from India. Indian girls don't do that. So it was a complete shit show. I left home and, I had all kinds of ramifications because of that. I was ostracized by the Indian community. And, when you're 16 years old and you're trying to find your way and you don't have much money, it's a good thing I had some friends who were very supportive. That took me down a path of not a destructive path, which I'm really happy with. I worked. I had a very strong work ethic. I worked. I put myself through school. And there's so much in between that happened. But I want to say that I had a blueprint from my parents, from my family, the family of origin. And I carried this blueprint around thinking that it would work in my relationships. And I quickly found out that it doesn't. And I help other people see that now. We all have a blueprint that we're operating on about ourselves, about the world, through our value system, our belief system about ourselves and the world. And then we quickly learn, hopefully, you know, and somewhere along the way, there's some intervention that some of this shit doesn't work and we have to rewrite that script. We have to tweak it. So some of the things you're to be exact with your question is I've worked really hard on my cultural identity issues. I grew up in an Indian household, but I lived in Montreal, Canada. My parents wanted me to be Indian. I wanted to be like everyone else. So there was a clash of cultures. And that can work at times if the values of the both cultures are compatible. But when they're not, it completely fucks with your mind. So I was one of those girls who'd go into the bathroom and change my clothes, put a lot of makeup on, tease my hair, you know, because I couldn't be that at home. So really, I lived, you know, from 8 to 3, I was one, you know, I had one identity. But then 3 to, you know, when I went to back to school the next day, I had a different identity. And it was really hard trying to figure out who the hell I really was, because I had my parents telling me, be this way, particularly my dad, and then going to school and my friends saying, be this way. And, you know, the peer group is so important. It is our primary group of socialization once we go out into the world. And I just wanted to be like everybody else, but I wasn't like everybody else. And my struggles were very different to my friends, and they often couldn't relate to that. So there was a lot of unfucking of all of that, the cultural clashes that was going on inside of me, which I carried actually into my later adulthood.
I mean, no wonder you had to write this book.
Well, no wonder I became a therapist. You know, I used to think, hey, I just kind of fell into this profession. And looking back, and if, you know, you guys are interested in buying the book and reading it about my life, I was always a therapist. Now I just, you know, I was talking to somebody about it in the midst of writing this book. I said, hey, my dad used to call me a shit disturber, and I am a shit disturber, except for now I just get paid to disturb people's shit. But I am literally the middle child. I have, you know, I have two brothers, baby brother, older brother. I was always in the middle of their shit. And then my mom always told me about all the stuff that was going on between her and my dad. So I was always that, the therapist in between them. And I think, you know, I was a therapist all along. I just, you know, now I have my license to do therapy with people.
Let's do it. Let's get into it, Anita. How can we start? What is one of your first concrete prescriptions on how we can start unfucking our lives?
Yeah, the first one is self-awareness and self-care. That's why, you know, my tagline is working always from the inside out. And people say, well, what does that mean? It means that we have to truly know ourselves, and we have to engage in introspection that's going to be constructive. So I'm not saying let's just sit there and think about ourselves, because there are people who overanalyze everything, but they overanalyze everybody else, not necessarily themselves. So I say we have to engage in purposeful introspection, meaning thinking about your life, some of the things that you do, the ramifications of those things that you do in your relationships, because it always starts with us. It is so easy to externalize and blame other people, but at the end of the day, we got to own our shit. And if we don't own our shit, guess what happens, Miranda? We end up being passive aggressive. I'm sure you've met those people, right? Mm-hmm. They can't express their aggression directly, so they couch it under, you know, comments here and there, taking jabs left, right. It's because they are not comfortable with aggression. Somewhere in their childhood, they've learned that it's not a good thing to express your aggression. Hey, and by nature, let me tell you, we are all aggressive human beings. We need to embrace that part of ourselves. The other thing that people do is they project. You know, I might say to you, Miranda, you look a little angry. Why are you so angry? And you might turn around and say to me, Anita, I am so not angry. I'm so chill right now. But what I'm doing in that situation probably is projecting my anger onto you. Mm. I can't say to you, Miranda, I'm really angry with you because you did this to me yesterday. So what do? I pretend it belongs to you. And this is not done intentionally. It's done on a very unconscious level. And I say this, we learned this in our family of origin. And Miranda, we are not blaming our parents. And the book, I write about that in the book.
Is there any kind of exercises you can do? Because having self-awareness can still be quite hard. Like you said, you know, you've got people who've gone all their lives, you know, being passive aggressive, but you can't, you know, just sit in a dark room and go, right, let's do 5 minutes of being self-aware. Or can you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's well, I always say to people, let's start thinking about some of the things that you do, okay? Some of the experience that you've had in your relationships with other people, because one cannot not be in relationships. People say to me, well, I want to read your book or I want to listen to your podcast, but I'm not in a relationship. I said, dude, you totally are. First, it's with yourself and it's with your neighbor. It's the people at work. It's with your family. It's not a romantic relationship because when we think of relationships, we generally jump to the romantic ones. So my number one thing to start this wheel of self-awareness is to sit down with yourself, which most people don't do because we're constantly doing, but we're also doing because we don't want to have that quiet time, because guess what? We are afraid of our own thoughts and feelings and looking in the mirror. So stop, find some quiet space, think about the relationships that you've had in your life. Think about your role in those relationships. It's easy to focus on what the other person might have done, but think about your role and think about some patterns that might be repeated in your relationship. Some people come into my office with a graveyard of relationships. Nothing has worked for them and they blame other people. And I have to stop them and say, listen, it can't be everyone, can it?
Yeah.
So then it
yeah.
must be something that's going on with you. If this is you and you can relate to this, you need to sit down and you need to think about your role in those conflicts, in those relationships that didn't work out, and look at certain patterns that are going to pop out at you, because I guarantee you there are. That's coming to some level of self-awareness to say, hey, what's going on with me that I did all these things? Yes, other people can trigger us, poke us, but ultimately we have a choice to react the way we react.
Yeah, it's the classic thing of like when you hear someone always say, oh, all my exes are crazy. And it's like, oh, I don't think that's true. Once we've had our moment of self-awareness, what can we do next?
It is really looking at our thought and emotional process. And what does that really mean? How often do we actually know what we're thinking and feeling? I believe a lot of us are driven by our unconscious mind, and people say, well, how can I become conscious of them if they're unconscious? Well, once we start to break down some of those patterns, some of those events in our history, we can help some of that drip into consciousness, and we can own some of the things, like I just talked about, projection. When we don't want to really own what's coming from the inside and we blame somebody else for it, when the shit is really ours. So I say, well, own your shit, right? If I'm angry with you, Miranda, I got to realize I'm angry. You're not angry. I have to get comfortable with the emotion of anger. And that might take a lot of work, because when I was growing up, my parents, the message I probably had, if I project a lot, is, Anita, you can't express that kind of emotion. It's not acceptable. The other one I mentioned also is being passive aggressive. Oh, it's my least kind of pet peeve. Because when I meet passive aggressive people, I tend to get more aggressive myself, because I can sense that, you know, and they'll deny their, and you've met people like this, I'm sure, Miranda.
There is no passive about it. It is all aggression. Yeah.
I'm just, you know, butter would not melt in their fucking mouth because they're just so sweet and they just never get angry.
But,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, because they cannot express their aggression. Again, they couch it and they make other people want to go for therapy and they agitate everyone else. And it's once we're able to, through self-awareness, own some of those thoughts, own some of those feelings, we can then start to communicate better with other people and just be at a place where we are comfortable accepting all aspects of our personality. And I want to say that we need to be healthy emotionally and to have healthy relationships with other people. We need to have an integrated self, meaning don't cut off the angry part of you. Don't cut off the part of you that's very sweet also and loving. We are made up of so many different things, and we want to have all of that together. And also give yourself permission. And then it's okay to be angry, but it's okay also to be happy. There's so many things that we need to integrate into what I call the integrated self to be happy and healthy in life and play nicely, as I say, with other people in the park.
Well, it all sounds like just being well-rounded. You can't knock
Absolutely.
Off one emotion and hope that the others will take over. It's you know, to be a proper human being, you have to have all of them.
Yeah, but as you know, and I'm sure as you've experienced, many people are not, they're not comfortable with negative thoughts and negative feelings unless they're spewing it at someone else.
Love that. Absolutely. What would be the next one? What's next on the list, Anita?
This is a tough one. Conflict. Most people run away from conflict. Stop avoiding and start confronting.
Yes.
And I'm sure, like, out, you know, coming off the holidays, Miranda, I'm sure there was a lot of conflict over expectations that were not met around gifts, all that kind of stuff. That I always hear about that in the new year. Oh, I didn't get what I wanted, or I didn't get anything. And the partner will say, well, you never freaking ever told me you wanted any. It's all that game about mind reading. One of the chapters in my book is called Unfuck Mind Reading. It's talking openly and honestly about what we really expect. But people don't want to do that because they're afraid. They want to avoid conflict. But anytime we avoid conflict, we end up actually creating more conflict in the long run. It's a short-term gain, but overall a long-term loss. Conflict is a part of any intimate relationship. It's going to happen. Spend enough time with someone, and guess what? You are going to have conflict.
Yeah. But where do we start bringing that up, though? Because I've had so many partners, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are the same, where they're just like, oh, I don't like conflict. So how can you start?
Well, you start with just that, internalizing this mantra. I am going to have conflict in relationships. Conflict is healthy and it is normal. It is not something that's bad. Think about what a conflict is. It is basically you think one way, I think another way, and those two things are not in sync. And that's okay. Mm. And that's normal, because we are not mirror images of the other. You're going to have a different experience of something, and I am too. And over time in any relationship, that's going to come up. At the beginning, it's all like best foot forward and all that kind of stuff, you know, superficial. We're trying to get to know each other. It's all formal. But eventually, if this relationship is going to get to the next level, we are going to start being our true self. And when we are true self, we're going to start really expressing what we really think and feel, and that's going to clash with our partner. Healthy and normal. So accept the fact that conflict is healthy and normal in relationships. Embrace that conflict rather than fear it. And of course, that takes work. It's not going to happen overnight, because you've got to go back to, how was I raised with conflict? What happened in my family of origin? Was I encouraged to resolve it? Was I encouraged to run away from it? Was I encouraged to repress it? What? We bring all of that into our current relationships. We got to unfuck that. But conflict is normal. It is healthy. Embrace it. Be comfortable with it. That's the place to start, because most people, like you've said, are afraid of it. They want to push it away. They want to avoid it. But the longer you avoid it, the bigger the problem becomes.
I totally agree. Some might say I'm a bit too much up for a bit of conflict, but you know, I think it's the way you get things settled, though, not in a shouty way, but that goes all back to your emotional process.
What do you do when you're confronted with conflict?
Oh, I run headfirst into it like a bull in a china shop. Like, but again, it's all that kind of thing where you have to go back and you have to think of your self-awareness and your emotional process, rather than having to sit there and be passive aggressive about things.
Yes.
Like, it's talk to that person and try to say, well, I'm angry about this. And, you know, what are you angry about? I guess, I don't know. What's the best way to deal with it?
Well, it's, you know, and again, we're adding all of this up and building on the other prescriptions, self-awareness, thought, controlling our thoughts and emotions, or knowing what they are, talking to one another. We need to be able to do that, and knowing the needs and expectations, not only of ourselves, but our partner. When there's a conflict, and it's not going to happen in the middle of the conflict, right? So I teach people, look, you're not going to solve anything while you're fighting. Take a break, a day off, and say, hey, can we talk about what happened yesterday? Because most people don't want to talk about it the next day. They put it away thinking that it's resolved, and they walk on eggshells for a while until they get to some kind of balance again. However, that hasn't been resolved. It just, you know, it's another, you know, I talk about an emotional table in my book, and that's way too long to get into. But we put our shit there, and the shit just piles. And when there's a huge conflict, an escalation, people are left saying, well, I don't know what the big deal was. And the other person will say, well, it is a big deal, because we've been, you know, all that shit show from last year, we never talk about, we never resolve. We just kind of, you know, push it under the rug. And that doesn't solve anything. We need to be able to embrace it, talk about it, and then come to some kind of resolution, which is, you know, so I talk about the three C's: conflict, embracement, confronting, and then, of course, coming to some kind of resolutions. All these things are connected. And if we're going to have healthy relationships with people, we got to be able to work on them and improve them in our life.
I really love the fact that these are all interconnected, and it's not just like, right, you do step one and then you go on to step two. It's about using them all within each other.
Yeah. And they're not in any kind of sequence because, you know,